Now entering Nerdist.com.
That'll be the day.
I'm gonna clean up this town, Mr. Carruthers.
Boy, I wish we had been more.
Flying so high.
I wish we had been more. Flying
ain't no peeping Tom.
He's British for no reason.
We should face it this way, and then.
My name's George McFly.
Now
that I stopped my dad from meeting my mom.
So for the podcast listeners, Donald Glover is our guest today.
Hey.
And we are at the Bumbershoot Festival in Seattle. And the room that they put us in is clearly some kind of Glee Club audition space.
Yeah. Black Nativity.
They're casting Black Nativity.
Which I will leave you guys to. Oh, wow.
It's a doctor in spite of himself.
I
feel as though it's a body doctor, maybe.
It is a body doctor.
It's weird that, like, it just, he looks so
lecherous.
Yes, exactly.
Black Nativity is right here.
He's always wanted to be a molester, but he's just a doctor.
He's just a doctor,
himself.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Every time he tries to molest, he's
his skills are so geared
God
towards doctoring. Yeah. He can't do anything but it.
I'm going to take your temperature. Oh, I'm just going to save your life.
Oh
my God. You have cancer. I'm sorry. Like, every time he wants to do something lecherous, it's like...
Oh, I was about to molest you.
About to molest, but now
made me feel those breasts.
Oh my God.
Odor.
You probably shouldn't eat that. Damn it, I can't do this.
Are you ready for your Christmas chocolate? Get the insulin!
You guys were, when Donald and I came in, you were not opening the door, and Matthew shows up at the door outside.
Out of breath.
We're banging, out of breath, drenched in sweat. We hear the piano playing, and Matt says very, very matter-of-factly, sorry guys, we were just writing a Back to the Future musical.
It's true.
And they actually were.
We weren't lying.
Yeah, it was like from the Back to the Future musical from the perspective of Mayor Goldie Wilson.
Yeah.
It's more, more about his struggle starting as a guy that cleaned up.
It was about time.
I like that.
Running for re-election in 1985. Yeah. Lot
every once in a while, like, you just hear like little pips of like what, the way more interesting thing of time travel in this guy's life, which is really awesome.
That's fantastic. That's a great idea.
That's a great idea.
We should start the Twitter hashtag Donald Glover for Mayor Goldie Wilson.
Oh my God!
All these
guys.
Songs, like, he has like a wife who like is struggling and all this stuff, and then every once in a while, it's like, oh, that clock tower got struck by lightning. Yeah.
Or he kind of starts to catch on that there's been some kind of weird time travel thing,
and
but he has to hush it up because everyone's going to think he's crazy.
Oh, yeah.
So it's just his constant struggle with...
It's this weird political thing.
I can't tell them what I've seen.
They think I'm crazy. The first black mayor is insane.
Like, but someone from the future told me I'd be mayor.
1985, he's like, is that Calvin Klein?
Yeah.
Oh, it's Marty.
Oh, fuck.
Shake out of it, Goldie. Shake out of it. He's hitting himself.
Yep, that's right. And then if there's a chase through the town square again, he's like, "This looks very familiar to me." It just goes. I wish you guys would do that. I hope you do the Mayor Goldie Wilson Back to the Future musical.
Yeah, we could do that.
But what we did figure out is how easy it is to write musicals.
Oh yeah.
I'm sorry.
I don't know how to play piano. I just put my fingers in spots until it sounded okay, and then just followed them up.
I think that's pretty much how they're written. I think that's pretty much how they're written.
I started playing Washboard and the Coconuts. Yeah. They have a whole thing over there.
Yeah, Coconuts, very popular percussion.
In fact, Donald and Chris could leave us, we'd like to get back.
Please. You'll have more important things than Bumbershoot this year.
Musicals.
Musicals.
Donald Glover, thank you so much for taking time to come chat with us. I know the Bumbershoot's been fun, but our schedules have been so packed.
Yes.
How have your shows been going so far?
Pretty good. Seattle's been very good to me, except for walking here. That was the one. Seattle.
You walked from LA. That is crazy.
I know. Boy, are my tired.
Let me tell you something. Donald Glover is in phenomenal shape. You can see it. You can see it. He's in phenomenal shape.
And my muscles are ripping.
I like to sit next to him as contrast.
Then we have to just push you guys together to meet in the middle somewhere.
Then I would be for him.
Like, oh, he's eat some vegetables.
Jonah's a little Glover, a little Myra.
He's tall. Yeah.
It's been great. Seattle's been great. But I almost got jumped today. Or killed. I don't know. Me and Chelsea.
In Seattle?
In Seattle. I know. That's why we were crazy. We were going like, this can't be real. We literally were walking down the street here because I was like, oh, I need to leave early because I'm doing the podcast. And we were walking here. And I had this red hoodie. I'm wearing a red hoodie on. Mm-hmm. And I had a leather jacket over it. And I had my hood up because it was raining. And we walked past this dude. And he goes, hey, SA.
Whoa.
And I'm like, what are those? And I knew he was trouble because he was kind of like, seemed kind of drunk. And so he's like, hey, SA. And I was like, okay, you know, you kind of that weird thing when you kind of turn, but you're still walking because you don't know. And he goes, what up, folk? Now, do you know what that means? Does anybody here know what
that
means?
Is that some sort of a code?
It's a code. It's a code. It's a gang code, which is like, you know, if your family, you know, if like he was a blood.
Oh.
He would say, what up, fam?
Oh.
But he was a crypt.
Okay.
So he said, what up, folk?
Okay.
And I was like, oh, and I know what you're supposed to say is, you're supposed to say not affiliated. You're supposed
to. Right.
But I didn't even want to give him the idea that I knew what he was talking about.
Right.
I didn't even want him to give him that. So I turn and I say the most dramatic thing you can say, which is, I'm not from anywhere.
which is a whole third musical gang in the streets, and they all come out snapping.
He's real nowhere man.
I literally was like, I'm from nowhere. Like, and
was he like, oh?
No, he would not give up. He was like, just stop. Did I want to talk to you? I was like, mm-mm. Like, me and Chelsea. He followed us for a good, like, two blocks.
Are you sure it wasn't some trust fund hippie kid trying to do a scene?
You think? So, like, I was so surprised. I was like, Seattle has, I was literally, we were talking about, we were like, there's no crime. It can't be. Everybody's so happy and eating
organic
food.
Has any good conversation ever started, hey, SA?
Hey, SA.
Hey, nice pants.
I want to give you my car. Yeah, I don't think that's ever happened.
You had a really good show last night. Thank you.
Thank Maybe you. If you're a famed teacher, Jaime Escalante.
Yes.
But other than that, if you're ready to stand and deliver, then yes. If not,
late great.
Otherwise, no. Yeah, I'm surprised.
Jaime Escalante, part of my favorite mural in Los Angeles. On 3rd and Alvarado.
I've always wondered what your favorite mural was.
You always talk about that.
Yeah, Donald and I earlier were like, what do you think Jonah's favorite mural is?
There's a lot of choices because everyone knows.
Is it that one of the whale on Venice Boulevard?
No, that's not it.
That's not a good close, though.
Nice mural. It's a big one.
No, it's Edward James almost dressed exactly like Jaime Escalante with his arm around Jaime Escalante.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, right. I know it. I always pass it. I love that.
It's on 6th.
Yeah.
For those of you at home, it's in Los Angeles. Don't worry about it.
For those of you listening to the Nerdist podcast and like, I'm going to put geography pins in every place they mention, and someday I'm going to visit all of those places.
It's right across the street from the 99 cent store.
Yes,
it's
over there.
Sixth
Our listeners will get killed.
Wait, watch. I can do this in their terms. Google Maps, 6th and Alvarado. Enjoy yourself.
Wow. Yeah.
Is it 6th and Alvarado?
Isn't it?
It's around there. It's right next to the park.
It's right on the park. Okay. I pass it every day to get home.
Famous park because it's from
Echo Park.
No, it's not Echo Park.
Oh, sorry.
It's I can only think of the Weird Al parody song, Jurassic Park. MacArthur Park.
Oh, MacArthur Park.
MacArthur Park is running
into that. I kind of think a lot that way, too. Park. Like, if I hear, I was like, you guys listening to Eat It?
Yeah, exactly.
No, usually I'm. Yeah.
No.
I only really, when pop songs come on, I'll only know the Weird Al lyrics. I can never remember the real lyrics.
I'll never forget, there was this barista at the Starbucks that I used to go to a lot, and I
so mad that word is in our culture.
I'm sorry. Okay. I had left my iPod on the table. And it was playing. I'd gone to go like get milk or something like that, and he'd done a swing by and looked at my iPod, and I was listening to Weird Al, and he shook his head and walked away.
Are you serious? Yes. That guy was fucking wrong, man.
He was.
That guy was wrong. No, he's never going to be invited.
That
on
guy's.
Show.
I mean, we're not going to give it. He's electric. I mean, like, he's legit great because like there's very few things that like you will be great forever. As far as it's like every like if you go to a 12-year-old right now and say, what's the funniest song ever? They'll probably say a Weird Al Yankovic.
He's cornered that market. Like,
He's cornered that market.
There was a kid right
behind me.
I went to the show down in Orange County, and there was a kid behind me going crazy. And he was like 9.
Yeah.
And it's funny because like it's like he would be kind of quiet during like Eat It and all the kind of songs that you know I grew up on. And then when the
White and Nerdy
came on or some song, I was like, this must be one of his originals, and it's not. It's like it's a parody, and this kid knew everything about him.
Yeah.
Wow. It's like. He expands generation gaps.
It also opens that door for comedy gigs. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just like that's the first thing you're exposed to.
Yeah.
I don't know why people look down on it as soon as they're like, oh, I'm past it. It's like, but come on.
Yeah, there was
like,
this comic. I was at the in the backstage of UCB, and the guy's like, I said, oh, I'm going to go see Weird Al. And he's like, really? Like ironically, right? I said, no. I was like, I think he's awesome. He's like, what?
Yeah,
like it's like he was like basically like what? David Cross doesn't like.
Yeah,
he calls him
David Cross. Was in Curious George.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What are you doing in the backstage of UCB if you like Weird Al? Like, you know,
it's like yeah, this is like
people
he's,
get too uppity.
I know he's good. He's good at it.
Yeah,
that's the thing.
Great,
he's not bad at it. He's very good.
He's phenomenal. Like if you listen to like a hardware store, the harmonies in Hardware Store are insane.
Yeah,
yeah. The Charles Nelson Reilly song is great.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. Although I had a friend who went to a concert of his, and he apparently opened with a cover, which I was like, that must make your mind explode.
That's weird.
Like, it's just like, it's not like a Weird Al, like, parody. It's a literal cover
of
his
song. He does the polka medley, of like, where he just covers songs.
Oh, yeah, cover songs of it in polka.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think it was just a cover.
Really?
I heard.
That'd be awesome.
Which would be like, that, I feel like that's just like flipping.
Guys, this is a whole new direction for the Weird Al experience. We're just gonna start playing covers. we're gonna retranslate some of the songs that we parody back into the original songs.
Oh, like that's like a
Bermuda
that's a
Shorts
sketch
throws
on,
his sticks. I'm not doing it.
That's a sketch on the Dana Carvey show where they had like Weird Al and then they had Weirder Al who would do parodies of Weirder Al and the Weirdest Al who would do parodies of the Weirder Al, but they were just the original song.
I really liked the Dana Carvey
show. Oh, it was
great.
It was fantastic.
Amazing writers on it.
Yeah, it's like a stacked
show.
Colbert was on that show.
Colbert, Carell. Robert.
Colbert and Carell in my favorite sketch from that show, which is an amazing sketch, which is the waiters that get nauseous from explaining food.
Oh, yes.
Which is the best sketch in the world. So funny just watching them trying to make things sound appetizing and keep from vomiting. It's funny.
That's not on DVD either, is it?
I don't know.
Not yet.
I don't know if they did enough episodes.
I don't know if they can clear
they
it.
They
did
one season.
Five,
yeah.
Right?
Then there was like Taco Bell the next
season. Yeah, and Skinheads from Maine.
Yeah.
Never did care much for the Negroes.
They did the Beatles Anthology sketch, like, because Beatles Anthology was on ABC at that time. Mm. And they just cut to like the guy doing Ringo, and he was just sleeping.
What was your background? Where'd you grow up? What's your comedy? Like, what are your comedy roots?
My comedy roots. I grew up in Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
I was born in California. My dad was in the Air Force, but I grew up in Atlanta. And I guess like my comedy roots was like, you know, I guess you want to get bare boned, it would be like, you know, Looney Tunes, of course, Nicktoons,
sure.
kind of stuff. But I think the first like comedy nerdy kind of stuff I was really into is my dad was like, you have got to check out, you know, Monty Python, Holy Grail.
Oh, what
like,
a cool dad.
He was just like, you had to get. He's like, because he grew up with his aunt. His parents died when he was very young. He grew up with his aunt. He always used to tell the story about he had just turned it on and was on. He was watching it. And the scene where the rabbit
bites
off that. He said that he got in so much trouble that night because he just couldn't. His aunt came and was like, shut up. And he's just like, I can't. It's the funniest thing I've ever seen. He's just rolling. And like that. And I saw that movie and I was like, whoa, this is hysterical.
It's almost like the Killing Joke sketch.
Yeah.
He's like, he almost died. He almost died from a joke. Well, that's great. So that's awesome that your dad passed that along to you.
He was really into it.
And then, so from there, when did it kind of occur to you, like, I think I might want to pursue, was there anything else that you wanted to do, or do you think it was comedy pretty much?
I wanted to, there was a whole bunch, I wanted to be a puppeteer. Mm-hmm. I used to make marionettes, I was totally into, like, Jim Henson, nerd about it.
I had,
it.
Like, four or five puppets growing up, like a Charlie McCarthy dummy, a Groucho Marx dummy, a Muppet old man,
I had a Charlie McCarthy dummy, and my mom had to get rid of it because it terrified me at night.
Oh my god! One time it fell down like when I was sleeping off of its shelf, and it like when I got up in the morning, it was laying on the ground, and its hand was on this little miniature bat that I had, and like it was on the ground, and like I saw it, and I was like, it's going in the closet inside a crate.
Like it was creeping toward you, and then the second you saw it,
it
just dropped where it was.
Like, wake up and look at it, just like
I had
to have my mother get rid of my buddy doll. after I saw Child's Play.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't deal with it.
All you had to do was just cut it open and see that there wasn't a dwarf inside.
Yeah, well. But then you cut open his stomach. He's like, I'm going to get
you. What if his soul jumps into me? What if his soul jumps into me?
I was going to get you now that you've cut me open.
I know. Well, guess who's getting cut open? Oh, you're not filled with cotton, are you, you mother? Like, I... Yeah.
You look like cotton.
Oh, God. I wanted to be a puppeteer. I wanted to be a puppeteer for a long time, and then I wrote plays. Man, you guys are getting all the nerd stuff.
This is good.
I wrote plays, and they were like David Ives plays, which were very short, like short plays. And I eventually figured out from writing these comedic short plays, I was like, oh, these are sketches.
Yeah. Like, these are just comedic sketches. Short plays.
Yeah, these comedic short plays have to do with people farting a lot. So they were just sketches. And I really got into that, and I was writing plays and stuff. And I didn't really think you could get paid to make jokes. Mm-hmm. That was just, like, not something that was in my lexicon at all. So I went to – but, like, in my high school yearbook, if you look at it, my thing is most likely to write for The Simpsons.
Are you serious?
Which is crazy, yeah, which is really – which was, like, my pride and joy.
Did you ever write a Simpsons spec script? A lot of writers
That's
do.
That's how I got my 30 Rock job.
Are you serious?
What? Simpsons spec script, and then Everybody Hates Chris.
Now, for people who don't know that are listening – in the business, it is generally regarded that you should never try to write a Simpsons spec script because it is very hard to get. Like, you think you have an understanding of characters, and it's very hard. So if you did that successfully, that is a huge deal, because so many shows I've worked on, people are like,
"Don't even."
Someone
try.
Wrote another Simpsons spec, it's and it's usually a rough go. But that is incredible. So then you started working on 30 Rock.
Yeah, I started working on 30 Rock, and that Tina and them were just amazing and smart, and like those guys wrote for like Family Guy and Frasier and all these.
That's like old school.
Old school team of writers that knew what they were doing, but also people who had written for like the all these shows like on HBO and you know Gary Sanders.
Larry Sanders. What was your?
Gary Sanders. Which was that weird crossover.
It was the in between episode.
It's like I don't know where Larry ends and I begin. What was your Simpsons spec about? What was the story?
It was. The story was basically there's some good jokes in it that I really like. Where basically Homer it takes that big right turn like a lot of Simpsons things are, where they start off this one way and then they end up being another. So it starts off that they go to the music store and Homer likes this song, but he goes home and downloads it illegally, and then like a SWAT team comes in and it was Hall & Oates. So like a SWAT team comes in, he goes to jail, he goes to court, and Hall & Oates is like against him, and like they're like the finding and stuff like that. And it's really my pride and joy in the script that I really enjoyed was that he's like they're like talking, and then at the end they win, like Hall & Oates win. And he's like, yes, we won, and da da da. And then the officer says, I know you won, but you can't sleep here. And like, and they like zoom out to show like he has got a blanket. And like everything's like, that's fine. And he's like, that's fine. I don't need it. We're doing pretty good. We know. Grab the food. And he's just like, grabs all like the food. And like Oates is like his dog, kind of like, come here, Oates. Come here, boy. And Oates is like running. Like, that was like my pride and joy. But like, basically he had to do like public service.
Right.
For doing it, and he ends up being like a sort of like I was gonna have like 50 Cent or somebody do the voices, like this kind of rap group's kind of lackey kind of thing. And then Bart ends up being really good at it, and they take Bart on, and then he starts his own group, and there's a rival like kind of gang like hip hop war.
That's so awesome. Like,
that's great.
And so I feel like we've all watched The Simpsons. I mean, I still watch The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Like, when I come home, like, I have a season pass, so I watch episodes I've seen a million times. And those voices are so fucking ingrained.
Yeah, they're in your head. I mean, I had a Talk Boy that I got, that I bought, like, I remember, because it was like $30, which is like $1 million when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I saved up and I bought it, and I wasn't really allowed to watch The Simpsons. My parents, I think it was a Time magazine article that was like, don't let.
Bart Simpson is destroying your
children. Yeah, he's like, Bart Simpson is mean to his mother, so you can't let him watch it. And
too
it's
much
like,
sass mouth.
My dad hated that Bart called Homer.
Yeah, he was just like, that respect. Yeah, yeah. And it's like, it's a joke. But yeah, I wasn't allowed, so I would put it on low when I got home from school, and I'd put the Talk Boy by it and record it.
The Home Alone then, 2 Talk Boy
yeah,
recorder?
Yeah, the Home Alone 2 Talk Boy recorder. And then in bed, I would listen to them back. And like that's how I learned all the jokes.
Did you ever slow them down and pretend the bar
oh,
was
absolutely. Yeah, it's just like, it sounds like a man's just talking to a gorilla most of the time.
The Talk Boy. Was it a tape recorder?
Yeah, like, remember
so you're basically making analog MP3s.
MP3s. Like a DAT tape stack.
It kind of looked like the Zoom. Like it was just like kind of like a handheld thing and it had a little voice. Thing
that I used to record TV all the time and listen to it. Did you do that?
What?
Jonah, just record television and listen to it?
Yeah, all the time. I had it on cassette tapes and I would listen to it like in the car, like Ed Wood or like any kind of movie I was really big fan of. I would just like pop it in and listen to it.
Yeah. Take that, you filthy animal.
that kind of stuff.
Right? Yeah.
That's one of the first ones.
You'd say Merry Christmas, you filthy animal.
Oh, right.
The second
one. This is Peter McAllister, the father.
Yeah. It's like no adult sounds like that. Like they always just slow it down.
Someone freaked out on Twitter that they're like, Macaulay Culkin is 30. Holy fucking shit. Like, that totally freaked them out.
I thought he was 30. Like,
he was always slightly older than me. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
You're totally okay with that?
Yeah, I'm fine with it.
What weirds me out is that I just realized like next year it'll be 10 years since the Strokes' first album came out. Which means 20 years since Nevermind came out.
Yeah.
Which is like really odd to me for some reason.
Or Under the
like,
Table and Dreaming, the Dave Matthews Band.
In 2000, it didn't feel like, it felt like years and years had gone by since Nevermind came out.
Oh, absolutely.
But like, it doesn't feel like 10 years has gone by since
The Strokes album.
Yeah, since the first Strokes album.
Yeah, I feel like it just came out.
Yeah.
I'm still just surprised that college basketball players are younger than me.
That's a weird point in your life when athletes are younger.
I
always like to think of it in this terms. These always freak me out. So a girl who posed for Playboy right now or could be in a porn could have been born in 1992. Yeah. That's a tough one.
That's so hot.
That's so hot. I know. Guys, we don't
or
have to
if
turn
you're
this
Tracy
in a
Lords, 1993.
Yep. Come on. Or I think it was more like 1995. Tracy Lords guy. I think she was like 15.
Those tapes have been destroyed.
Yeah. So do you, you know, when you start working on 30 Rock, how did you sort of make the transition to Community and like, what was the 30 Rock writers room like?
30 Rock writers room was very, it was really fun. I mean, like, I've never been in another real writers room actually. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, honestly, I mean, I've been writers room that are like we've made ourselves, like Derek writers rooms, and like things for like little sketches or things for like the movie or whatever. But as far as a television show, that's the only one. And I've been told from outside sources like, oh, it's a, I mean, like they were. Sometimes you'd work for 25 hours, like legit work 25-hour days, come in at 10, leave at 11 in the morning, you know, sleep for a little bit and then come back for the table read. And it's a lot of work. And like, but it's, I've never laughed that hard before. Like those guys, like Robert Carlock and Tina are just geniuses when it comes to jokes. And like Robert just does not stop.
Mm-hmm.
He's just so funny and keeps coming. And he won't. Both of them are like these machines where they're like, if the joke's not perfect, we're not leaving kind of thing.
Yep.
So like they take a huge amount of pride in their work. And it's, I've never laughed that hard before. And like making him laugh, it's a lot like what I've heard SNL is like, where it's like, you know, if Lauren says, good job, you know, like kind of thing, then that makes the day glow. Like you're just like, you're the happiest person for the next year. And like, it was the same thing where, like, if I can make Robert laugh, if I can make him laugh at, like, a joke I pitched, if he just busts out laughing, I was just like, I was on cloud nine.
Nice.
You know, but it's a hard room because they're all professionals. They've been doing it for a long time. They all have Emmys.
Right.
You know, like, it was rough.
And to them, it's like, it's become just, like, their career and their job, like, where it's like, this is, like, they have families and stuff like that, right? Yeah, that's always a weird thing, like, where you... Like, I met a lot of the modern family writers, and they're all just dudes in
their
40s.
They're just dudes, yeah.
They've been writing since, like, Wings.
Yeah.
And they're just, like, these guys, and this is their life, but they're not, like, you know, they're not ending the day going, I got to rush and go to a show, or I got to show that I work on shows and go and hang out with comics and stuff like that.
Like, it is a very different thing from what I was, because I was, like, the youngest dude. I was the young dude there, like, and it was me and Kay Cannon, who I guess, like, was the other younger lady there. She's hilarious. And we were the only ones who were just like kind of like the young upstarts who were like, oh, I want to go out and see the Kanye concert. Or I want to go out. But everybody else was just like, I want to go see my wife. You know, like, I want to sit down and have a beer. All the rest of them were just like, dudes.
When the fuck does Tina Fey sleep?
She doesn't.
It's crazy. Yeah, like, kid. It's just, well, not only kid, but like acts in a show runs a show,
then in her off time manages to do movies and write films.
She doesn't sleep.
What the fuck? I mean, like, she's
between her and Joel McHale, like, watching those two, I've learned, like, okay, if you want to be, like, a star, if you want to, like, be a name that people are like, oh, that's, I know what I'm getting when I hear that name.
Right.
You can't sleep. He's the same way. Like, he has a wife, two kids, he's had them forever.
I know.
He just tours, and, like, every weekend, like, she, what we would write at her, we would be writing, and then she would be filming all day. She'd come upstairs, write with us for, like, 2 hours, and then be like, okay, I gotta go put my daughter to bed. So she'd leave. She'd put her, she'd give her daughter a bath, play with her for, like, 3 hours, put her to bed, and we'd come over to her house and write into the night.
Oh, shit.
And she just wouldn't stop.
Yeah, and that's what I think, you know, so many people, I mean, our culture now is so obsessed with being famous. Mm-hmm. And so, like, when you hear about, like, that or, like, Joel or, you know, people that you respect that kind of earn their place, you get so fucking mad at someone who's just a douchebag on television, some reality show, like...
Good job. I married Heidi, and voila.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly. I mean,
that's like being known. That's not like celebrity.
No. I mean, but it is this weird thing where there's a big difference because I mean, I read somewhere that like most kids now, if you ask them what they want to be when they grow up,
they want to be famous.
For nothing. They don't want to. Yeah. They don't care. They say famous, which is. Yeah. Before it was just like successful. It used to be I want to be successful. Now it's just famous.
Well, they think that's the same.
And now the situation makes $8 million a year.
Yeah,
he will crash and burn though. There's
I'm fine
no way.
With whatever they do though. Just like I just hope they stay away from comedy in general because you know there's the kind of people that just like they want to be famous. So they're like, oh, I'll do stand up.
Well, they can't though. They can try it, but they will fail. Comedy takes work.
Yeah. Right.
Whenever anyone says like, whenever I can tell someone doesn't have the stand up gene, but they're like, oh, that's easy. I want to try that. And I'm always like, try it. Yeah. Try it for a while. See what it's like for a month.
For a month.
Go on the road. Give it a shot because we've said on this podcast a million times, it can be not rewarding than just getting up and doing it. So
yeah, I try and tell everybody, it's just like, if you don't like it, you're not going to do
it. You will not stick with it.
You won't stick with it because there's no right, like, you know that story like Seinfeld tells, like kids when they come, it's like, I want to be a stand-up, da-da-da-da-da, and he'll be like, you're never going to make it, don't do it, it's too hard, you're never going to make it. And his philosophy is like, if they can take Seinfeld being like, you're not good enough, you're never going to make
it,
then he's just picking off the weak ones. You
yeah,
know? And he's just like, true. It's true. Like, if you can take Seinfeld being like, you're not going to make it, and you still do stand-up, you want to be a stand-up.
Yeah.
You know,
you're
not going to do anything else. You're not going to be a doctor.
Yeah.
You know? In spite of himself?
Yeah.
A doctor in spite of himself.
Yeah. True. You're Ken Jeong.
I'm going to molest you. Oh, take this antibiotic.
Oh, my God. You're very sick.
Does Derek Comedy, does that precede 30 Rock, or how long were you guys doing that?
We did that in college. We were all met at NYU together. We were all like kind of... We were in this group called Hammercats,
mm-hmm.
and we all kind of broke off because we were just hanging out so much, and we wrote a pilot together, and we were writing these things, and we had all these sketches left over that we didn't have, and our Dominic Durkas, who's in there, it was me, Dominic Durkas, in D.C., and Dominic Durkas was rooming with our director, and his girlfriend was also a producer, so Maggie McFadden. And we just came together and started making these videos. And people always ask, like, oh, what'd you do to get all these hits? It was literally, it was just that YouTube got big, I think.
Yeah.
It wasn't that, I mean, like, and we were the first, I think one of the first time people, because, like, on our first hits, you would read the comics and they'd be like, this isn't real. We were like, yeah, we know. Like, we were like the first, it was before people had started putting up.
Yeah.
You know, putting up sketches. Like, people just like, this isn't real. Like, you didn't actually. It was like, yeah, they're sketches. They're tiny movies.
By the way, that brings up one of my favorite sketches of all time, which is the one where you shit your pants.
Oh, Jerry.
Jerry shits his pants. Like, I hold that up to, like, my favorite sketches of all time.
Oh, yeah, wow. Like, that means a lot.
Yeah, I can't handle it sometimes. Like, I just, and like, it's not the kind of thing where it's like, I tell somebody, it's like, oh, you should check out the sketch. I'm like, here, I'll show you the sketch. And then it's just me.
Watching you, that's on the necklace, open it up out of the vault.
Yeah, it's great. It's a fantastic sketch.
That sketch literally came from a kid in my class who, he didn't shit himself. But what he did was he covered himself in – he peed himself. And he peed himself, and everybody smelled it. So he went to the bathroom and somehow got cologne from somebody. So covered himself in cologne. Smelled even worse. He came in, and then people were like, Jesus, what's that smell? And he was, like, crying. Like, I know, right? Who smells so bad? And we were like, it's you, dude. Like, you smell bad.
Like, that is a mark on his permanent record. You ever catch up with that guy on Facebook?
No, I wish I knew where he was. I wish he knew. He was like, thank you for giving me that gem.
Well, I remember, I don't know, like 4 or 5 months ago, Jonah came in and he seemed all happy. And I was like, what? He was like, I just saw Mystery Team. I just saw the Derek comedy movie. And he was like, it was fucking incredible.
Oh, yeah, that was great. I went to the New Beverly showing.
Yeah, oh, wow.
Yeah, it was a blast. I was looking forward to it. But I really feel that movie is going to be... Like, for, like, you know, because, like, if they were the age I was when Wet Hot American Summer came out.
Right.
It was, like, right after high school for me. I just moved out here. And then I saw that, and I remember going, like, this is going to be big. This is good. Yeah. This is a movie of my time and my sensibility and my, like, comedy taste. And like, I feel like that's going to be a movie for, like, kids.
Mystery Team, now available on iTunes.
iTunes. Now available on iTunes.
It was great. It was solid jokes throughout. It was an awesome story, a cool plot.
It's nice to hear that. I mean, like, we try really hard on that film. There's so much that went into it, but, like, it was...
How'd you sell it? Like, how did you... I mean, it is difficult to get a movie made.
No,
like,
I mean, we didn't. I mean, it was all independent. We did all the money from YouTube that we make... Like, from selling, like, shares of, like, I guess, like, you can put, like, Gillette razors, you know,
right.
Our thing. We never paid ourselves. Like, we always saw how bad that can go. Like, we always tried to tell our friends, like, don't split up the money because it's just going to get weird.
Right.
It's really weird really fast and it doesn't work. So we always just put it – we started an LLC and we just put the money in there. So we just saved all that money because, like, the Derek sketches cost nothing to make. They cost, like, $5 to buy, like, you know, fake poop.
Fake poop.
This was a Walmart. But we just did that and we raised the money and we just made it from scratch and we didn't pay our, like, we had to pay ourselves for, like, union stuff,
right.
But we just signed the checks back into the production.
Okay.
And that was basically it. And yeah, I mean, like, it's nice to hear you say that, just because, like, I look at the movie and I'm like, oh, I would have made this joke here and we would have done it, but, like, we were in it so deep, trying to make it work. But.
No, I mean, like, it's hard to, when you're producing and, like, trying to, like, when you're responsible for the words and, like, the shots and kind of, like, putting everything together with everybody,
right.
You lose sight on stuff. It's like, you know, it's easier to just be like, I'm just going to be in... act these words as well as I can.
Right.
But then when you're like, it's like, oh, but I'm still thinking about the scene we got to do
next.
And Gary Shandling talks about that a lot, where he said it was so hard for him to be writing all these, like, you know, these scripts for the Larry Sanders Show. And, like, he said he hated, like, knowing what's going to happen. And, like, he just wanted to focus on the words that were, like, they were being shot right then. He says,
I think it's Gary Sanders.
Gary Sanders.
Yeah, Gary
but he
Sanders.
Says it's, like, two different parts of the brain have to be working for these things. Like, you can't be a good actor when you're thinking about the words. Especially when, like, you're listening to someone else say your words.
Oh,
and you're just like,
It's just so hard to have little picture, big picture at the same time.
Yes, like, exactly.
Because you can only focus on one thing.
And also,
we
were, like, running the crew, which we had never done before. Like, we were just literally, like, 22-year-old, 23-year-olds. Running these, like, dudes who are just like, so let me get this straight, you guys are making a movie and you're getting to tell me what to do.
Like, you know what, though, it is so, like, I mean, if anyone is, you know, like, I don't know how to start in the business, I mean, like, you guys just fucking start. It's like, you just start
just
doing
do
it.
No,
just
that's,
do
that's
it.
Exactly what it is.
That's exactly what
right.
Like,
you gotta tell them. I mean, I try and tell everybody, like, they're all like, so you get Facebook messages and Twitter messages, like, how do you do? And it's just like, just do it. Like,
no. But how did you do it?
What's the where does Mr. Hollywood live?
Yeah. You start. Yeah, yeah.
Where can I?
there was a guy that, like, we all kind of, like, know that, like does a lot of TV stuff, like a lot of stuff. Like, he, like, you know, goes and he reviews things and whatnot. Right. But he was like saying, like, oh, hey man, like, how do you do the stand up? I was thinking about doing it. I was like, well, you know, you start, you find open mics in the weekly, and then you go and do things. Like, no. How do I, like what you're doing right now, like, you know, spots on Comedy Central, stuff like that. What do you? I want to do that.
He's like, let me refer you back to the original. You start writing jokes at a place.
Yeah,
and
just because you've been on TV doesn't mean you're
I also
there
like that, because, like, that's the idea of, like, Comedy Central or someone just being, like, freaking out. I'm like, we have no comedians. Like, we're like, where are we going to find these comedians? Like, we got to, like, just, like...
I'm here. I'm right
like,
here.
Like, no one wants to do that either. Like, nah, Comedy Central, half hour, no one.
I want to be where Seinfeld is now, retired and successful.
Yeah. Extremely.
So, how... I mean, it's... How did you go from when did Community kind of? You're actually the third Community cast member who's been on the Nerdist podcast.
Oh,
Allison,
now
you.
Oh,
Joel,
nice.
Joel and Allison.
Excellent. Allison. Those guys are my boys. I guess what happened was I literally Mystery Teen came out, and it was this thing where I took a week off from work, which is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
A dude on the show had naturally occurring triplets.
Whoa!
And he was gone for 2 days.
Oh my god!
So that was it, and I had to take off for like, and I felt really bad about it, but it was this big deal because I had taken off a week, and it's one of those shows you have to give everything to.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt really bad, and I was getting to stand up hardcore. I was like loving it. I was doing it every night. I got off early. Like I wouldn't eat. I'm just like literally like during lunch I would eat and like write jokes, and then I'd be like, oh, hope we get out early so I can go do stand up. And I realized, you know, you can't do both. I was like, it's really unfair to 30 Rock. So I just literally at the end of the third season, I just was like, hey, I really want to do the stand-up thing, and I'm doing all this stuff, and I don't think it's fair. And I've done 3 years here, and I love it, but I had to.
That is incredible to leave a fucking sweet job.
Oh, I wish you had heard the rants my mom gave me.
Oh, I'm sure.
It was just like, and it's weird to hear like your mom, who doesn't have really like a lot of, like, my mom sent me a text message the other day, which she likes to try and shorten words all the time. So she literally she was like, oh, come down. Like, and she, C-U-M, come down. And I was like, C-U-M. And I was like, mom, you can't do that. But like, to hear that woman like talk about like, Emmys are good for like, she knows like the business now. Because
right.
Like,
yeah, yeah.
You know about that. And she's like, and I was like, I got to do what I got to do. But literally it was, thank God, Mystery Team started, and like the they did a showing in Los Angeles, and the Russo brothers were there from Arrested Development fame. They had seen Jerry. They liked Jerry, so they came to the show, and they were like, "Oh!" They took the director Dan Ekman out to lunch, and they were like, "Oh, is that? We might have a part in this show we're doing for Donald. You want to audition?" And I thought it was total. Like, I had been unemployed for like 2 weeks, so I was just like, yeah, pilot, I'm not going to get it. I'll audition, it'll be fine, but I'm going to work out this stand-up thing. And literally just send a tape in. 2 days later, it's like, you got it. So we'll fly you out to LA.
Whoa! It was like, never happens that way.
And I was like, so I got the pilot, like literally. And I was like, you mean like I got a camera test? And they're like, no, you just got the pilot. So it was really cool.
You show up on set, you're like, okay, so am I auditioning?
Yes, am I still auditioning?
Is this a very complex screen test?
It happened really fast. And like, I hate telling, that's the thing, I hate telling other comedians that story or like the 30 Rock story because it sounds like bullshit.
Yeah.
But it is this, and I always used to feel bad about it, but I also was still like, you know, Joel brought up a good point. He was like, well, when that 30 Rock thing happened, like you had the scripts. How many people would have a good script ready? Because I sent him that script that night. Like literally, he emailed me, and the same thing with like the Community thing. It's like it's about, you know, really liking it and being ready when it happens. So
that is constantly, because some people, like bitter people, will be like, man, Donald. Because if you look at your career, you're like, Donald's really lucky. He fell into this and fell into this, and you're like, no. You make your own luck.
Well, I had no friends.
You fucking
in college.
you show up like when opportunity presents itself. You have to be ready.
I try and like tell them like no friends in college. Like of course I had friends, but like I didn't do anything but comedy. Like that was it. Like I was at UC. I interned at UCB, cleaning out like tampons and all that stuff, so I could take classes for free. And I watched every show.
Wait,
and
how
I
many tampons are they storing at the UCB?
Oh, a bunch.
It is a tampon
that
farm.
That was like the bad job to do. Like you like as an intern, it'd be like, oh, you got the women's bathroom, and now you'd be like,
God. But that's the thing you have to do.
Comedy
though.
Women bleed a lot. I don't know what to tell you.
Yep, that's why they're comedy women. They have to go into comedy.
Comedy women
they're...
are rejecting eggs at a rapid
rate. rapid rate.
Right.
That's the thing you got to do. I mean, like, when I was graduating high school, all of my friends were moving up here to Seattle. And, like, all my core group of friends I was in bands with, like, it's like these are, like, my brothers. And they all moved up here. And then, like, it's like I moved to L.A. because I wanted to do comedy. And I had no friends for a long time because that's all I did.
Right.
And it's like it's something you got to do. You just kind of got to push away a lot of life stuff.
Yeah.
You kind of push away life in general to kind of do comedy.
Well, it almost doesn't feel like a choice, though. You do it because you want to. You care about it.
Yeah. Right.
And it's more important to you than, you know,
then,
like
yeah.
fucking hanging out again. And
all
not
my
doing
friends
anything.
Went to like Ghana and London and all that. All that was like the thing to do at NYU was just like visit these things and do it and party and you would get to go to visit. And I was like, people were amazed. They're like, so you went to NYU and you didn't leave like over there? I was like, no, I didn't even go home for the summer. I was broke, dead broke every summer. Being an RA, because they gave you free, mm-hmm. they give you free room. But then I would just like, you know, skate around. I would skate around and do those things where there's just like, experiment, $200, you know?
Oh,
I did those so many. I'm still fucked up from that. It's like, look at this number two, and this flashing light will go, and don't eat cookies for a day, you know, like, all this weird
stuff. I was going to ask about your shoulder cock. Did that
come
from...
Yeah, oh my God. You noticed it?
Yeah, I did. I did. Yeah. I was about to text you CUM down here.
Yeah, good thing it hasn't started singing yet. That's the weird thing.
Experiment!
But that's how I made my money. But you got to, like you said, if you love it, you'll do it.
It really is about, like, it's a very simple formula, but one that people, I think they seem to make it harder than it is. You have to start, and then you have to work hard.
Yeah.
And, you know, you just kind of every once in a while sort of be aware, like, am I headed in the right direction? Is this what I want to do? And then you kind of dive back down.
Right.
And you see nothing but reasons to stop when you go do that. You see these older guys that have just been doing these open mics for, you know, 20 years. They're just hanging out. They still have their jobs. Like, you know, they had the job they had where they're like, well, I'll do this until it takes off.
Right.
And you see this, you're like, am I going to be that guy? Or am I going to be this guy that I see? Like, I got like...
Yeah, it's this thing where, like, it's weird. I mean, like, but that's the point is for it to look effortless.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I feel like I'd have a joke about which is worse, having a baby or having AIDS. And, like, it took a long time for people to laugh at that. Like, you can't just go on stage like, AIDS and babies are the same thing. You know, and have people just, like, crack up. Like, people are like, no, make that funny.
Give this guy a show.
Yeah, like, no one, like, you have to work. There was a lot of times people booed. And then, you like, and we're like, I don't find that funny. And then you find a way to make it funny. And then people... And then it seems effortless, but that's a month and a half of work.
Well, yeah. In the beginning, you can't necessarily trust the audience in your brain because they're still your brain.
Yeah.
So when they're laughing in your head,
it's
something.
Projections of you inside your dream.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Have you guys seen Malkovich?
It's
being on.
That's all we are, man. That's all we are.
But is there a lot of? First of all, both shows, is there much improv on 30 Rock? Is there much improv on Community? Or is it pretty much like, these are the jokes? Just fucking...
Well, the writers are really good, so the jokes are there. Like, 30 Rock is... I mean, like, every once in a while, like, I guess the best way to put it would be, like, the jokes are super tight, and the scripts are super tight, and they're always there, especially with story structure. But if there's something better there that they come up with there on set, it always makes it in.
Mm-hmm.
And, like... Cause I don't know. There's an episode where she's trying to leave the room with two plates, and Jack is in the forefront, and he's not. He doesn't even see her. He's just like a waitress, and she puts it on like that. And that was all made up on the. That was all made up on the fly, and they just literally just like, oh, it just worked. Both of them just improv, and that's the same thing that happens on Community. All the jokes are really tight and really funny, but if something feels right, like the other day that I was particularly proud of this, I was turning my back on Joel, like on Jeff's character, turning him back. I'm like, oh, I gotta go where the heat is because all the girls were like on against him, so I had to go with the girls. And I'm like, yeah, you asshole, get out of here. And I have a girl like on my shoulders, like, yeah, you're such a jerk. And I turned Annie and I go, hey, as an improv, I was just like, hey, do you know what a cleanest bathroom is? I was very happy. And like, if it's in character and it works and it's not destroying the story, they will leave it in.
Oh, that's great. I mean, the cast on Community, I mean, 30 Rock too, but Community, like, what an insane cast of funny people on that show between you and Ken and Joel and Allison and Chevy.
Yeah.
I honestly think Joel, if they remade Fletch, which they always talk about doing, I think Joel would be Fletch.
That's great.
Joel would be a phenomenal Fletch.
Joel would be a phenomenal Fletch. He would just be so good. I really want to write Johnny Quest for him, actually.
Oh, holy shit. Yeah.
I really want to write. I don't even know if I should say that out loud, but like that's what I've been like. I'm like, he would be so funny as kind of a smug, like, I deserve the world because my dad was Dr. Quest. You know, like, kind of asshole, funny guy. I was like, I was laughing so hard, but like, yeah, I think it would make an amazing Fletch. Like, it's funny though. Like, yeah, it's the same thing. Him and like Chevy have the same. If you go back, it's that smug, good looking.
And they're both like 8 feet tall.
Yeah, they're both like 20 feet tall.
Is it? Were you a Fletch fan at all when you were growing
Huge.
Up?
Yeah, I was really into Fletch.
Are you used to the idea that you're working with Chevy now, or is it sort of like, it's Chevy? Like, you know, or at first, like,
At first it was like that, but then he goes, "Oh, you're a prick." Like, and then he calls you, and then like you're just like, "Oh, he's just your angry old grandfather." Right. I always tell the story, which is true. Like he's like, "You guys never send me anything on email." And then like I was like, "Chaddy, what are you talking about? I sent you like a photo the other day." And he was like, "Ah, but my email's in New York." And like that's a true story. And I was like, "Oh, you're 1,000 years old, you know." But he,
Someone sent me a link. It's you walking by Chevy, like backstage, just going, "I showed your trailer, Chevy."
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I mean,
what's going on? Like, yeah, I have. It's a bit that I do now called "Messing with Chevy" or "Fucking with Chevy," where it's just my mom had the greatest comeback because I did one where I just like, "Hey Chevy," and he goes, "What?" And I go, "I'm dating your daughter," and he goes, "Which one?" Like that. And my mom saw it and she sent me. She was like, "You should have said the pregnant one." And I was like, "Mom, that's awesome. I should have."
Great tag, Mom.
Great tag, Mom. High five.
Well, I would be remiss if I did not bring up how you should have been Spider-Man.
Wow.
But the power of Twitter, I feel like. And the message was heard by Sony, but I'm sure a lot of guys, if you listen to this podcast, you probably know this. But someone, did you say you wanted to be Spider-Man? How did it start? There was a Donald Glover for Spider-Man campaign that lasted for a while before they gave it to that British kid.
Yeah, there was a website, a popular website, that was like, if they're gonna remake the Spider-Man movie this early, they're gonna redo it so fast and reboot the series. Why does Spider-Man have to be just like another white kid? Like, why not just have it be like contemporary? Like, try and Dark Knight it up and make it like, you know, if it's in New York, it could be a Latino kid or a black kid. And one of the comments, and they posted a big picture of me like, "Donald Glover's a nerd and he'd be perfect because he's witty." And I was like, really, I was really touched. I was like, because I had never even thought about that. About being Spider-Man, no one does, you know. So I wrote on my. You think about being Spider-Man?
I could do it.
Myra for Spider-Man.
That's Myra for Spider-Man.
Spider-Man. And I was just like, I wrote on Twitter, "I would love to be Spider-Man. Let's make this happen." As a like tongue in cheek, like as a joke, I just thought it'd be funny, and I put the hashtag down for Spider-Man as a joke, and people just got on board. I was really touched by how many people got on board immediately. And it was this really interesting. It was an interesting week. It was the most interesting week I heard. Like I heard, like the head of like CAA was like, "Who the fuck is Donald Glover?" Like it's just like coming.
Sony kind of asked you to like, please don't do this anymore.
Yeah, I mean, like it was like Sony. Like I mean, like Sony came, and they, I mean, like it was like this thing where like they just wanted to see how it played. Because like that's the thing. Like I feel like a lot of people always feel like there's some sort of like people are usually really bad. Like the people.
Mm-hmm.
Not, I mean, like, a person is really bad. That's what I mean. Like, people in general probably usually just want to do what's best for a lot of people in general. And, like, that's the thing. Like, I don't think Sony's there's like, "We're never going to make a black person Spider-Man." They don't care.
Right.
They would make, like, I've read something that, and it's true. It's like, if Will Smith wanted to play Hitler, we'd make a Hitler movie.
Right, right. If people would pay to see it,
we want that money. And I think it was just like this thing where everybody wanted to sit back and see how it was because they wanted to see how people felt about it. And it was this interesting – and I reading all the blogs, it was this interesting thing. I learned a lot. And I think what – I think the thing that bothered me the most that I think people think I walked away thinking like all these people were like racist. And I didn't – I honestly did not think it had anything to do with race as much as like they're fanboys. They want it to be just like the comic.
Yeah.
But you know, but I love that someone sent you a tweet that was so fucking racist.
Oh no, yeah, the tweets were so racist. They were just like, you fucking Edward, you think you can be like the next Spider-Man? And I just wrote back, "Hello?" like I wasn't sure. But I brought this up on another podcast. I was like, it was interesting to me because I was like, if Spider-Man was a novel and it was just it was a novel, I had no pictures, and it was just a poor kid who lived in Queens with his aunt after his uncle got shot in the street. You probably think that would be a black kid.
Of course.
You wouldn't think it was a white kid, necessarily. But, I mean, I love Spider-Man. Like, I'm going to go see this movie.
You said, like, a fan's like, "I wish I could be
you." I wish I could be you, and then I look in the camera, like, really hard. It was really interesting for a little bit.
Or you see the Spider-Man mask, and then you pull it off, and it's Donald, but then in the background, the real Spider-Man
goes by. And it's just, oh, yeah.
I like, you told me someone tweeted you, that, well, you got to be Spider-Man. You don't see a white guy trying to play Shaft. Like, why would you pick the most racist?
The most racist, like, yeah. lamest. Yeah. Like, it was just like, even like if you were brought up like, you had brought up like, I don't know, like Static Shock. Like, it'd be like, even though, like, that was the thing. Like, I thought it was cool. The cool thing about it, it was just like, you know, Spider-Man could be anyone. Like, is that, like, Spider-Man's the only, like, I would never want to be Captain America or, right. Like that's a cool thing. It's like, he lives in New York. He's covered from head to toe. And he lives in, like, Queens, which is, like, the most one of the most diverse places in the country. And I thought that was always interesting. Like, the whole, like, Shaft thing is like Shaft and Static Shock and those guys have to be black.
Black Vulcan has to be black.
Yeah. That's part of his thing. Like, that's the part of the thing about their. I never want to, like, I would, to this day, I wouldn't want to play a superhero whose identity was being black.
Right.
Like, I just wouldn't want to do it. It's just not that interesting to me. That's what Spider-Man's so interesting. Like, he feels so responsible.
That's
for
too bad because I have the script for Meteor Man 2 that I was.
What? Let me see.
No, well, no, you just said.
Oh, we were talking about that last night.
Oh, Meteor Man last night.
Well, I'm only taking offers for Blank Man. Yeah, like, yeah, that's yeah. the only one. I'm only taking offers for Blank Man.
What was that SNL sketch with Sinbad where he's like, he's going to Superman's funeral and they won't let him in? He's like, I'm Black Lightning. Everyone knows who I am. Like,
I don't know who that is.
Yeah, you're. I tried to start the hashtag Hardwick for Hulk when I heard
oh,
that.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
When I heard that Edward Norton was out, and
oh yeah,
and it didn't work out.
It didn't work out. Who did they pick?
I think it was Mark Ruffalo.
Oh yeah, they did.
You know, I keep losing out parts to Mark Ruffalo.
I honestly don't feel. I mean, like, I don't. I wouldn't go for that. I don't think like the Hulk. I mean, the Hulk is. It's a lot like Superman, where like they're awesome characters,
right.
And they're so cool. But at the end of the day, you know what's going to happen. It's like, oh, he's going to come up against Kryptonite and something. Like, it's like same thing with Hulk. It's like, yeah. Someone's going to make him mad.
Right,
you
know? Right, right.
You know, Spider-Man could be so diverse with, like, all the things that could come up. Like, he has so many complicated things going on.
Yeah.
Like, between his aunt not finding out and no one should know who he is. And
he's got a relationship.
And he's got a relationship.
Bad relationship with his best friend.
He's in the actual comic, he got fired. Or he got laid off from the Daily Planet.
Yeah, from the Daily Planet. Yeah. So, and also, in the
Bugle,
he's making his own.
Bugle.
I know. So let's not mix these things up. But yeah, and he's making his own web. He's like a sign. So he's got all these things going on. As a friend of mine said, he's like, he's always at the edge of being crazy. Like, he could at any moment just.
Well, yeah, because if you think about what is driving him, it's this crazy, like, guilt. I have to get back at, you know, at the world for what happened. Like, I have this responsibility, and now I have to fucking. It's not because he wants to do it, it's because he has to do it.
And he'll never do enough to make it okay.
And he'll never get appreciated for it.
Yeah.
And like, that's why when he's not working and he has to fucking deliver pizzas or whatever to you know, just to live.
Right.
And he can't, like, he can't really get celebrated the way or make money the way that he really.
And I when we were talking, I mean, like, and not to harp on it, but like when we were talking, like me and Dan Ekman, the director, we were like geeking out when it was at full height. We were like, what if I got to play Spider-Man? That would be so crazy. Because like, would be this interesting thing of like, it would be cool to have everybody, like, you're Spider-Man and like this black kid, and they'd be like, oh, they just like, they assume he's white.
Right.
So like it would be so interesting to have him just like, God damn it.
But it probably would be like Black Spider-Man. Like, they'd have to make that part of the identity.
Yeah. And also, like, hiding out, like somebody brought the funniest blog thing I read was just like, the problem with it is if ever he took off his mask, they would assume he was the bad guy.
Oh my!
And I was like,
Spider-Man a Black Widow? Let's find out.
Which I thought was so funny. I was like, where do you live?
God damn it.
It was dope.
Wow. So, you know, we only have a few minutes left, but I do want to talk about you put out a hip-hop album.
I did.
And I was reading a review about just that it is fucking awesome.
It is. It's
so
really good.
Was that just something like, I want to do this, so I'm just going to make it happen?
I used to, I mean, it was actually, when Derek was starting, we used to go to my room, and I had, like, the worst turntable set and, like, a piece of plywood they used for beer pong as, like, a setup, and I just had it in my room, and we would write sketches and just mess on the turntables. And I was really – it was a really interesting time in my life because I was really into indie. I was really into, like, Suvion Stevens, all that stuff, and I remixed that album as a – just – I remixed one song.
Can I have that?
Yes, absolutely.
Come on, Feel the Illinois.
Yeah. I remixed it. And I got such a kick out of it. A friend of mine that gave me a Fruity Loops. I remixed the whole thing on Fruity Loops before. I know, I remixed it on Fruity Loops. That's a crazy idea now because it was so basic. But I made an album just for fun called The Younger I Get. And it's the worst sounding thing ever. Like, I did it all through the computer mic on my laptop. So I'm singing into my screen. I had been making music for a long time. And this was the first one where I was it's not, I'm going to put it out there. The other ones were I would just make them and put them out. And my friends would hear them and other people. I had a small cult following, mostly because of MC Chris, who was a great, awesome MC.
I mean, met him? I feel like I met him at UCB.
You guys met him?
Yeah.
I met him
He's, cool dude. And I was doing stuff with him. But this one, I was I need to just stop being afraid and just meld my love of indie rock and hip hop. Mm-hmm. So I was I'm just going to do this album. And I'm gonna rap about the things I like and use guitars and rap about girls.
What's funny about it is that my friend Cash, he said, "Oh, you should download Donald Glover's album." And he says it's such a weird thing because it's as a comedian, more often than that, you kind of got to be a little humble and a little self-deprecating. But as a rapper, you have to be kind of boastful and and he figures out how to pull off both.
I try. It's a weird, and I figured out, I think, just doing the album, it's. If you say that, people understand more. That's the thing. I was really scared to do it for a long time. It's just people are just going to be Eddie Murphy tried the same thing. all these comedians or actors turn rappers or writers or musicians.
There's more self-awareness in yours where it's you talk about if you just, if you stopped doing comedy, you would be you had a couple lines about if I wasn't writing scripts with Tina Fey.
Oh yeah, I would be killing it. Yeah, that's what I try and say is I have lots of things. Yes. In the new, I have a freestyle coming out next week. Nice. I say if I, well, how do I put it? I don't even know how to I actually say it, but it's this idea of you guys better be better than me because I'm doing three other jobs. It is boastful and that stuff, and that's something that comes along with hip hop. But I try and make it relatable, which is interesting because it's this funny thing where I feel, I try and give a voice to indie kind of kids who like hip hop, but don't feel it relates to them, and that's okay. That's the point of hip hop and rock is sometimes hearing stuff that you wouldn't hear. And I feel as though the people who hate me the most as a musician are the ones who are just you can't rap about Tina Fey. you just can't. It's not rap music.
But just because no one's done it yet.
Yeah.
Because no one had the opportunity to do it yet. Well, so if we were to close out the show with one, can we play one of your songs at
absolutely.
The end of the podcast? What one would you recommend that we close the show with?
I'm gonna pass it over to you.
Yes, I'm on top. Is the second line in.
Oh, Hero.
Yeah, Hero is a great track.
Yeah,
I think that plays in very nicely to the Spider-Man Spider-Man talk.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Do you mind if that's the song?
I would love that. I would be honored.
Great. It's very aggressive and very grandiose.
And where can people? Is the album on iTunes?
It's actually at cul-de-sac-album.com.
Okay.
And you can just download the whole thing for free. You can listen to it for free, whatever you want. It's I don't want everybody to know this is something that burn it for everybody. Do whatever you want. I'm not worried about anybody stealing it. It's literally
no, steal it, please.
Yeah, please steal it. It's free.
Yeah, well, I mean, you are certainly, first of all, and people give me shit sometimes because they're how come you just kiss your guest's ass? And it's no, I'm just nice to people because I like people.
Also, why would you bring on somebody you hate?
Donald, you're a prick.
Hey, fucker. You stuff?
Why am I being attacked?
But honestly, you're such a nice dude and so fucking talented, and I think you're an excellent example to any young artist who is out there and I don't know what to do. This whole thing of just do it. And, you wanted to make an album, so you made an album. You wanted to make sketches, so you made sketches. You're a perfect example of what people should be doing if they care about something. So hopefully you know that you know, like that is also a part of your imprint on the world, as opposed to like the good comedy stuff that you're putting out there as well.
Well, and I want to say thank you to you guys just for having me on this podcast, because it is legit like a nerd badge of honor. Like, it's just like I'll get to be on Nerdist. This is so awesome. Like, I was like reading Twitter, like people were like, you should have Donald on. I was like, I don't want to add on, but you should.
I know. Like, when we were in Montreal together, we did the Montreal Comedy Festival at the same time, and I was kind of like approaching it slowly, like, so would you want to be? Because I never know. People are like, oh, I don't have time for a podcast.
Are you serious?
But
Professor, that's my bread and butter.
But I was so glad. So thank you again for coming on, Mr. Donald Glover.
We did it.
At Donald Glover on Twitter. Website? Just Donald Glover.
At Mr. Donald Glover.
At Mr. Donald. It's not at Donald Glover.
Donald Glover is my dad. So if you go, literally. But the website, I am Donald.
Okay, I am Donald, and at Mr. Donald Glover. God damn it.
Fuck it, we'll do it live.
Guys, we got Mr. Donald Glover on Twitter. Mary J. Blige, we gotta go.
Okay, what? Sorry guys, the Blige is playing. All
right.
The end.
The Blige.
Let me hear you holler, bitch. Actor, writer, rapper. Nigga, I do all of it. Lactose tolerant, addicted to cheddar. And I spend it on a jacket, man. I don't know no better. Yeah, it's childish, Gambino. Yeah, I'm fly as a feather. Yeah, my nigga be suburban, but my flow keep it ghetto. Keep my swagger Polaroid, you can watch it develop. Ain't it funny, in a year I went from different to special. Yeah, I got it together. Yeah, I took those chances. Labels on me like I might cause cancer. Yes, a nigga. Skater, she just think I'm fine. Nigga, use a hater. Style with no name, they just wanna label me. They should call it what these other niggas are afraid to be. APC store walking out with 8 bags. Yeah, I'm killing paper, call it pop and tag. You ever spend $3,000 on designer vision when you should really spend it on your little sis tuition? She played my album when nobody else out there would listen. I'm coming harder than these girls that you would swear were pissing. Da Vinci S. Baseball, but that would make me MJ, so motherfuck all of y'all. Tripping on this fame shit, drinking like a fucking fish. Listen to the next track, I be on that other shit. Yes, I sound weird, nigga, take it as a compliment. Guess who's in the house and representing like a congressman. Anything I put my mind to, I accomplish it. From writing scripts with Tina Fey to laying down the hardest shit. Who else is doing what I'm doing? No one, and I mean girls too. Intended no pun. I'm on the road, son, busy like I'm Bone Thug. Comment left anonymous, cause ain't nobody want none. She laying in my bed, she gotta be vicarious. Barf on the track, be amazing and rap furious. Damn, bloggers argue on whether or not I'm serious. It's not just Illmatic, not Eddie Murphy's delirious. Got the limelight, you stupid, you think I'm sharing this. Showing up late, promoters wondering where he is. Got some nightmares, but failing's gotta be scariest. But I will never fail, I'm a
Now leaving Nerdist.com.